I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is Monday, March 4th at 8:36 p.m. We have with us today as a moderator, Emily Mesh, and our committee secretary is Leah Frazier. Our members present today are Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Staff, Representative Colom, Representative Ortiz, Representative Cronk, Representative Tomaszewski, and myself, co-chair, Representative Johnson. Welcome to House Finance. Good morning. Today we will receive subcommittee closeout reports, and we will go through the reports grouped together by the chair of each subcommittee. Legislative Finance will be available for questions. We will begin with the Department of Education and Early Development with Representative Colom, and continue with Representative Colom for the Department of Public Safety. And if you would, Representative Colom, go ahead and come to the table with your staff. Make sure and put yourself on the record, and you may begin your presentation. Welcome to House Finance and on this early Monday morning.
My name is Julie Colom. I'm representative for District 11, South Anchorage Hillside.
And for the record, Edra Morledge, staff to Representative Colom.
I'm going to go ahead and have my staff read the report, and then we can answer questions.
Again, for the record, Edra Morledge. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Education and Early Development reviewed the governor's FY25 budget proposal and recommends the items contained in the below details. The unrestricted general funds, $84,105.9 thousand. Designated general funds.
It's 84 million.
Yeah,
it's million.
Okay.
You're right.
Let me start over. Unrestricted general funds, $84,105,900. Designated general funds, $25,293,400. Other funds, $36,818,100, and federal funds of $270,464,300, for a total of $416,681,700. Compared to the FY25 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommendations represent an increase of $15,192,000 in UGF, a decrease of $85.2 million in other funds, and an increase of $90,700 in federal funds, for a total net increase of $15,197,500. And I believe I said the decrease incorrectly. The decrease of $85,200 in other funds. The total permanent full-time positions are 279, permanent part-time 10, and temporary positions 12, for a total of 301. After holding four meetings and reviewing and discussing each of the governor's proposed transactions in detail, the subcommittee adopted the governor's proposal with the following changes. The subcommittee removed a $5 million request for the Alyeska Reading Academy and Institute and adopted an amendment for $5 million for the Head Start program. The subcommittee removed an $84,900 request for an administrative assistant position in the executive administration allocation. And the subcommittee removed a $1.2 million request for coding and Minecraft licenses. Some of the budget highlights include $5 million for the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, or ANSEP, a $1.5 million request for career and technical education initiatives, $1.5 million for teacher recruitment, retention, certification, and apprenticeship development, $650,000 for increased costs for statewide academic assessments, $1 million for a multi-year appropriation for the Alaska Resource Education Grant Program, and $1 million for grant funding for hunter education programs. It's the intent of the chair to recommend the Department of Education and Early Development partner with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to utilize their existing hunting and fishing education programs for their hunter education grant programs. Additionally, it's recommended that the department provide information to the full House Finance Committee on the increased Mount Edgecombe High School dorm management and food services contractual costs. The chair set an amendment deadline, welcomed amendments from all members, and the committee entertained five amendments, three of which were adopted as changes to the governor's proposed budget, as previously stated. You all have the attached reports, the agency totals, transaction compare from adjusted base to the House subcommittee, and the transaction compare from the governor's amended to the House subcommittee, and the wordage report. And with that, that concludes the report.
Any questions for the subcommittee chairs? Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. Thank you for the submission of this particular report. Under the budget highlights, the $650,000 for increased costs for statewide academic assessments. At the subcommittee level, was there an explanation as to how much that is for an increase based on what was already there for statewide assessments? And then what does it look like in relationship to how this additional monies will be used? What specific reason was there given to increase it by $650,000?
So through the chair to Representative Ortiz, we could probably look more details in the book. But I remember during the subcommittee, there was a change regarding the science assessments. And they had switched to the MAP and Alaska STAR, but there was a gap there with science assessments. And so some of the increase was to pursue that assessment. There was also just some changes that were made to make it more efficient and to reduce the amount of assessments that kids were taking. So,
okay. Thank you for that. Makes good sense. As a follow-up, though, in relationship to the $650,000, do you know how much of an we can probably look in the book, but how much of an increase that means? In other words, how much was already set aside for statewide assessments before the additional $650,000?
Let's see. Doesn't say, does it?
So just to make note while you're looking for that, I'm going to go ahead during the subcommittee to kind of make it a little bit more of a work session type of meeting, so it's not quite so formal. But, you know, so like if people want to dialogue for like three questions or something to that effect, I'm going to go ahead and make it a little bit more less strict.
And through the chair to Representative Ortiz, we'll get back with you on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I think I'm going to take you up on those three separate questions, if you don't mind. Regarding the $5 million increment to ANSEP, so my question is going to be, I know what ANSEP is through the university, of course, and I know that the K-12 model, but what does that $5 million actually do?
Through the chair to Representative Stapp, this is a increment that's been happening for quite some time. The governor feels very strongly in supporting an engineering program. That, to my knowledge, is not anything that is, it's not like providing scholarships. It's for the operations of ANSET.
Yeah, I obviously didn't sit on the subcommittee chair, but having been involved in ANSET for a number of years, the intent is to grow the program because it's been very successful, you know, in terms of it being able to take people mostly from sort of remote communities and engage them in science and engineering and mathematics and sort of topics that, you know, that they would not necessarily get the schooling at in their home environment. And because, again, because the program's been extraordinarily successful, the need to expand it and maybe, you know, spill over into other items is something I think that the governor shares along with a lot of other folks in the education community.
If I could add, Chair, through the chair to Representative Stapp, so this really delivers a service to high school students. They do this to earn college credits. Also, just to make note, this was an ask for ANSEP to be in the base. It's not one time. Last year was one time.
Follow-up, Madam Co-Chair. So next question is going to be regarding the $1.5 million increment to teacher certification programs. How many teachers do you get certified for an extra $1.5 million? Do we know?
So you're not – oh, teacher certifications. Hold on a minute.
I'd be on page 2, Alaska Teacher Recruitment, Retention, Certification, Apprenticeship Development.
So through the chair to Representative Stapp, when the department spoke about this, they didn't have a certain number that they were going to recruit. There was a vague goal. The 1.5 is really, there's a combination you can see in the book that it's, there's a lot of different pieces to this to try to recruit and retain teachers. And some of it is, I mean, they even have a marketing program and, you know, trying to develop, have a project coordinator. Unless I'm recollecting wrong, I don't remember them having a certain number that they're trying to focus on.
Thanks.
And one thing we'll try to do is stick with things that are changed, not just go over things the department has already probably gone over. So if we can. Anyway, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Representative Colomb, I am interested in the 1.2 request for coding and Minecraft licenses that you did not include, and I'm curious whether you heard from school districts directly or just the department about that.
I didn't hear from school districts directly, but there were, through the chair to Representative Hannon, there were concerns around the committee that this program was set up with COVID money, and so now they were trying to keep it going with UGF. There were several representatives that talked about getting Minecraft for students a lot cheaper. Like you can get Minecraft for like $5. And so there was a lot of questions around why it was so expensive. The department explained that they had an upgraded version that helped train teachers to teach Minecraft. But I think it was the consensus of the committee that that was a lot of money and that school districts could access Minecraft in a different way with a lot lower cost.
Well, did we have any discussion around how much has been invested in it? Because my understanding is districts and the department bought a lot of equipment, did the training, and now you're in a small rural district and you've got equipment and training, but if you don't get the licensure, you won't be able to use it.
It was, through the chair to Representative Hannah, it was not my understanding that there were a lot of districts in that situation. It was something that the deed has began to start setting up. There were several. One of the representatives mentioned her district was already implementing it and not really accessing what the deed had provided. So I think there's just a lot of questions about, you know, how much this needed to be spent on and if districts can basically figure it out on their own as well.
Thank you.
And Chair, if it's okay, you know, Ledge Finance is here. Connor Ball is here. Bell, and I think he might be able to address Representative Ortiz's questions about the assessments a little bit better. Is it okay if he comes up?
Sorry, who would you like to call on?
Ledge Finance, Connor Bell.
Yes, that would be fine, Mr. Thank Bell. You. Would you like to come forward and address the question if Do you remember what it was? If not, we'll have Representative Ortiz restate.
Hi, for the record, this is Connor Bell, Fiscal Analyst of Legislative Finance Division.
All right, very good, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the Chair. Mr. Bell, my question was around the additional $650,000 for increased costs for statewide academic assessments. Representative Colom indicated that it was in relationship to the need to do some changes in the science part of the assessment, which makes good sense. My question, though, is of the $650,000, how much does that represent an increase that's already how much is that of an increase is that compared to how much we're already putting towards statewide academic assessments? In other words, how much of an increase is that?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, again, it's Connor Bell, Legislative Finance, for the record. I will have to get back to the committee on the amount of existing funding for these statewide assessments. I will say that the cost for these assessments has increased over time, while the amount of federal funding to provide these assessments has remained flat. And for the past few years, a lot of that has been filled with COVID federal dollars. So this FY25 is its first year where there isn't that federal funding available, the COVID federal funds available. And so basically the costs have increased over the few years, and we have expanded the assessments, but there is no new assessment being rolled out in FY25 specifically with these costs. It's more that COVID federal funding is no longer available. But I'll get back with the exact amounts of existing funding.
Thank you.
Additional questions, Representative Joseph Silks.
Here, Mr. Bell, the Hunter education funding looks like it's in the base. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, that is correct.
And is that a brand new appropriation that we've never had before?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes, the grant funding for Hunter Education is new. There's existing programs for Hunter Education in the Department of Fish and Game. This addition in the education budget is competitive grants to school districts for education programs. So it may be provided through Fish and Game or a private party, but basically the districts are submitting grant applications to provide Hunter Education through this funding.
Senator Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. Going back to the line of questioning from Representative Stapp, under the $1.5 million for teacher recruitment, retention, certification, and apprenticeship development, can you explain a little bit more about what the department said, how this will assist with teacher recruitment and retention? In other words, how will the $1.5 help with those particular two areas?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the $1.5 million for teacher recruitment and retention, it's focused on a few things that are coming from the, I can't remember the exact name, but the playbook developed by the committee. There's a, Alaska Governor's Working Group on Teacher Recruitment and Retention. They released a playbook report in 2023. So these recommendations are based around that, and they're not, this is separate, this is not providing bonuses to teachers or recruitment incentives. It's more, there's funding for basically doing research, surveying on teacher satisfaction and the elements of why teachers may be leaving the state. There's money for marketing and creating videos and other materials to advertise teaching in Alaska. And so it's a broad range of activities broadly aimed at both presenting Alaska teaching as a career opportunity and also researching the problem of teacher retention and what could be done about it.
Thank you very much.
So we have four closeouts to get through this morning. We have a hard stop at 9:50. So let's go ahead and try to finish up our education committee. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Bell, treating the multi-year appropriation on Alaska Resource Education as sort of a primer for me. Naturally, we've all seen multi-year appropriations, but there's some requirement about multi-year appropriations. Isn't that correct? That because we were sued over them when we tried a massive multi-year appropriation on the BSA several years ago. And is the requirement simply that the money not be anticipatory to fund it, but that we actually spend it, for example, in FY25, we spend and allocate the money, identify it, and then we can also spend it for FY26. Is that how that works?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I would defer to Legislative Legal for more details, but this multi-year appropriation, the entire $1 million, is appropriated in year one. And so the department can spend that money in FY25 or FY26, but the legislature has to appropriate that money in FY25. The legislature cannot create an appropriation that forces next year's legislature to appropriate that money, since that would take away from the appropriation powers of the following legislature. So that $1 million will be appropriated this year, and the department has FY25 and FY26 to spend that funds.
So I'd like to go ahead and accept this closeout report. There will be an opportunity. There's still plenty of opportunities to find out more about the details. So I would entertain, just a moment, brief at ease. Record. That finishes the Department of Education Early Development Subcommittee report. Next up, we have the Department of Public Safety Finance Subcommittee, and that will be presented as well by Representative Colon. Go ahead and begin your public safety presentation.
Again, my name is Julie Colon, representative for District 11, South Anchorage Hillside.
And my name is Edra Morledge, staff to Representative Colon. I have my decimal points in the right place now. So the House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Public Safety reviewed the governor's FY25 budget proposal and recommends the items contained in the below details. Unrestricted general funds, $255,594,200. Designated general funds, $9,333,800. Other funds, $14,241,400. And federal funds, $40,916,300, for a total of $320,085,700. Compared to the FY25 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommendations represent an increase of $11,174,800 in UGF, a decrease of $153,800 in DGF, a decrease in $2,335,800 in other funds, and an increase in $1,725,000 in federal funds, for a total increase of $10,410,200. For positions, there are 1,001 permanent full-time positions, 12 permanent part-time positions, and 30 temporary positions. After holding 4 meetings and reviewing and discussing each of the governor's proposed transactions in detail, the subcommittee adopted all items by unanimous consent before taking up amendments. And it is the intent of the chair to recommend the budget item for the Alaska State Troopers clothing, uniforms, tools, and safety gear move from the language section of the budget to the number section and change to a one-time item so the legislature can more accurately assess ongoing actual costs in the department's budget. Some highlights of the items are $56,300 for Alaska State Trooper applicants to cover air travel costs who advance to the testing process and who are not on the Alaska road system. $147,000 for three vehicles to replace decommissioned vehicles used for inmate travel. $698,500 for three child crimes investigators in Bethel. $450,100 for two long-term non-perm investigators for missing and murdered Indigenous persons. $154,100 for a criminal justice planner to oversee the tactical and administrative functions related to the unmanned aircraft system. $3,499,800 is added for 10 new village public safety officers, bringing the total to 80. A new victim services division has been created within the Department of Public Safety, and $67,000 for a crime data portal for the public, media, and academia to find crime data reporting. The subcommittee amendments, the chair set an amendment deadline, welcomed amendments from all members, and the committee entertained 5 amendments, 3 of which were adopted as follows. The subcommittee removed a request for $75,000 for additional digital evidence management storage. The subcommittee removed $193,300 for a program manager for recruitment efforts, leaving intact the funding for the Alaska State Trooper applicant travel. And the subcommittee removed $178,400 for an administrative investigator for the Alaska Police Standards Council. And you have the following reports attached, the agency totals, the transaction compare from the adjusted base to the House subcommittee, the transaction compare, the governor's amend to the House subcommittee, and wordage. And that concludes my report.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, should on page 1, should it say compare to the FY24 adjusted base? And the deed closeout said FY25 also. I'm just wondering about that.
Through the chair, you are correct, Representative Josephson. My apologies. I will correct that.
And follow up? On the subcommittee amendments, can you describe the committee's discussion and findings on the removal of the program manager and the administrative investigator?
Through the chair, to Representative Josephson, the administrative investigator, is that what you asked on the Police Standards Council?
The middle of page 2, the program manager.
Oh, the program manager.
And also the administrative investigator.
Yep. So the administrative investigator that they asked for, this is not something that's existing, it was an ask. The Police Standards Council is not investigating crimes. They're investigating officers on any complaints. And in 2022, there were 50 complaints, with 33 of them were being investigated. They currently have 4 PCNs, and the request was around the anticipation of more complaints possibly coming because of body-worn cameras. And so I think the subcommittee just felt like right now the workload is manageable, and then if next year they feel like they're being overwhelmed, that we could readdress it next year. The program manager for the recruitment efforts, the department's done a really good job recruiting troopers. Currently, they have 2 human resource consultants in the commissioner's office, and it was the feeling of the committee that they could use existing resources for recruitment. We did retain the $56,000 for travel costs for those people making that final step. So we didn't take that away, but we felt like they could use what they have right now for recruitment.
Thank you.
And we're going, usually these go really fast. We can always ask more questions and dig into a little bit later. So just making note of that. Representative Galvin, Representative Staff.
Yeah. Okay, real quick, I just am looking through the highlights, and I wondered if you would share through the chair if there is was discussion around the costs of the I'm looking at the comparison of the non-permanent investigators. It looks like they're about 225 each versus the VPSOs, which looks like it's, and this could be because of administrative costs, I don't know, but I'm looking at 350 each, 1,000 each. And I'm just curious to know if there's any discussion around the differences. It seems like they may have similar skill sets, but I don't know.
So through the chair to Representative Galvin. So the BPSOs have a lot more skills and training that they have to do. They cover a lot more ground. The missing and murdered indigenous person investigators are very obviously specific to investigating those kinds of crimes. That's on top of the fact that BPSOs, that includes a $2.50 per hour increase. So there is a slight increase to the pay of the BPSOs.
Thank you. Through the chair, one quick follow-up. And it was there some thinking around why to classify the investigators for missing and murdered indigenous persons as non-permanent?
Through the chair to Representative Galvin, it's my recollection that the intention of these are like retired troopers trying to bring them back, people that have a lot more experience. And so I think that was the direction at this time to make them non-perm.
All right. Let's, Representative Hannon, one more question, and then we need to move along to our next presentation, which Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Cologne, my question's around the victim services appropriation and unit that's being set up. And I know that we've got positions in there for an administrative assistant, a navigator, an admin assistant, and paralegal. Did you have discussion or was presented who they would navigate them to besides the victim Violent Crimes Victims Compensation Board and the domestic violence? Because we've got victim navigators, but those programmatic grant programs are going to be losing funding. But we've got more state employees trying to get them to services, and I'm just interested in the intersect.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, that we definitely had a lot of discussions around that, especially around VCCB, where their funding went down, but they got three new people last year to distribute the funding. And so I think the victim service idea we're still discussing with the department. I think there might be some changes around that, because obviously you don't want to add a bunch of admin and take money away from where the money's supposed to be going out. And I think we're going to, I may be bringing some amendments forth toward the full finance committee once I get my research a little bit more solid. But that definitely was a concern. It did come up in subcommittee.
Thank you.
And Chair, if you don't mind, could I have Ledge Finance come and discuss what initially was brought up by Rep. Josephson about the 25 adjusted base, whether that was correct or not? There seems to be a correction that needs to happen.
I think my understanding that this is correct, but
just like to clarify it on the record.
Yeah, okay, quickly.
For the record, Morgan Foss, Legislative Finance Division. We do compare the FY25 budget to the FY25 adjusted base, and so those are the reports that are referenced in that narrative, and they are correct.
Okay. Right. Quickly, we have one question for you, Ms. Fox.
Through the chair, Ms. Fox, how do we know what the FY25 adjusted base is right now?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the FY25 adjusted base is referenced in our reports that we build these off of. In the governor's subcommittee book request, we have that reported there. Would you like to hear the exact amount?
No, that's okay. I'll ask you off record. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease while we reset for corrections and DCCED. Brief at ease. Finance back on the record. Okay, so I am going to step away and have Representative Edgman will be chairing the meeting, and he will also be presenting. So I guess we'll be in two places at one time.
Yeah, so if there's any out of order rulings, it'll be by accident.
So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Representative Edgman, but I think next up we have the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. So if you want to come forward, we'll let Representative Edgman take it.
Call the meeting back to order. Next up will be the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And if I could call my staff, Labe Ellensworth, to the table, please, to present the high-level overview. Morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Leigh Ballinsworth, staff to Representative Edgman. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development submits the following recommendations with no changes from the governor's amended requests for the operating budget for FY25 to the House Finance Committee. The recommendations, the dollars and thousands from the fund sources, unrestricted general funds, the request represents $10,775,900. In designated general funds, it's $64,308,800. In other funds, $62,877,500. And in federal funds, $35,641,600 for a total of $173,603,800. Compared to the FY25 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommendations represent a $0 increase in unrestricted general funds, a increase of $909,900 in designated general funds, and an increase of $6,685,400 in other funds, and an increase in $4,050,000 in federal funds. There are 560 permanent full-time positions and 22 temporary positions. The subcommittee reviewed and discussed the governor's proposed transactions The subcommittee adopted all items by unanimous consent, and there were no increases or decreases to the FY25 governor's request. There are some items of note that I'd be happy to go over if the committee is interested. There were no subcommittee amendments, and there are attached reports.
Thank you. Questions, committee members? Not hearing or seeing any. Mr. Allensworth, can you move to the Department of Corrections, please?
Absolutely.
For the record, once again, my name is Leigh Allensworth, staff representative Edgman. Moving on to the Department of Corrections, the House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Corrections submits the following recommendations with no changes from the governor's amended requests, with the exception of an addition of intent language, which I will explain under the budget action portion. The recommendations represent an unrestricted general funds, a $407,552,200 in designated general funds, $14,813,200 in other funds, $10,358,700, and in federal funds, $17,928,600, for a total of $450,652,700. Compared to the FY25 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommendations represent an increase of $31,841,200 in unrestricted general funds, an increase of $375,000 in designated general funds, a decrease of $12,531,000 in other funds, and no change in federal funds, for a total increase of $19,685,000 in all funds. There are 2,124 permanent full-time positions, no permanent part-time, and no temporary positions. Under budget action items, I would like to highlight the addition of intent language directing the department to work with the Office of Management and Budget and Legislative to work with the Office of Management and Budget at the Legislative Finance Division to develop a budgetary projection model for the agency before December 20th, 2024, and also directs the department to accurately reflect expected expenditures as reported by that projection model. The hope was to decrease the chances of a large supplementary budget, as we've seen in previous years. There are attached reports, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. See, we have in the queue Representative Colom and Representative Galvin. I think Representative Josephson, Representative Ortiz. But write all that down. Representative Colom.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I had a question on this. There's a request. I wondered if this was discussed in the subcommittee. The $5.6 million, they're replacing restorative justice funds with UGF. Can you explain the context of that?
The restorative justice funds are funded through PFDs for incarcerated individuals and I think third time misdemeanor. With the decrease in the size of the PFD, I believe 2 years ago, there's less available for those funds. To meet operational costs, they have to fill back in with UGF.
So follow-up?
Follow-up.
So was there any discussion that, like, the restorative funds go up and down? It just surprises me that when the funds went down, they just expect to have that level. I think last year it's like $19 million or something. So did the department speak about, is there an expectation that it always has to be the same amount, whether the funds are there or not?
Can we, just to engage our lifeline, Alexi, do you want to come up to the table as well to help us with that? Because I think
there's
some,
thank you.
Perhaps some historical context here.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division, through the Chair, Representative Colom. So of the uses of that fund in the statute, all of them except for the capitalization of the Crime Victims Compensation Fund are essentially replacing UGF. So for this item and the Office of Victims' Rights and the others, when the amount goes up, they displace UGF. When the amount from this fund source goes down, UGF displaces this fund source. So the only one that's additive is that Crime Victim Compensation Fund, which the statute identifies as the top priority for these funds, but it has just an allocation percentage in the statute. So the department's costs don't fluctuate based on the availability of this fund source.
Follow up. So this sounds like this has been happening this way. I guess I understand the operations. That doesn't change, but it's interesting to me that there is like a replacement of restorative justice funds. It sounds like there's an expectation that there's a certain amount that has to come from that, and if it doesn't come, it gets replaced with UGF.
Through the chair, Representative Colomb, so the statute reads that 79% to 88% of the restorative justice funds may be appropriated to the Department of Corrections. Mm-hmm. Both the FY24 and 25 budget use the 79% minimum to the Department of Corrections, but essentially that's how the statute is designed, is that we would allocate the funds to percentages to various purposes, and so as those go up and down, we just replace UGF, except for in that first priority.
Okay.
And next, we have Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Edgman. I'm curious to know about the discussion related to the supplemental budget and whether or not there is a need. I understand the intent language for building projection model, and I think that makes perfect sense. I'm just curious if there was discussion as to whether they needed funds in order to hire somebody to help do that, or if that was just something that would be already assumed by the current funds.
Mr. Ellsworth, do you want to take that?
Yeah, through the chair. I believe the direction to work with the Office of Management and Budget as well as LFD might help absorb those costs. So that was part of the intent language.
And I think I would add that we... You know, we held three meetings, so we didn't hold the customary 7 or 8 meetings like we have in years past, but we did talk at length, in as much as we talked here at the committee level, about increased costs and about, you know, going back to House Bill 49 and certainly the trajectory of the department's UGF going up by about 3.2% every year, total cost structure. But the leap in costs for facility maintenance, for overtime, for personnel costs, for contracts, everything just sort of went in a trajectory that you know, you just heard Mr. Allensworth talk about intent language. That was the one tool we thought we could put forward to try to hold the department, I don't know if accountable is the right term, but to come back with a better explanation, a better sense to us that this isn't going to happen again, because the $40 million-ish supplemental is just something that's just not sustainable. But at the same time, it's a department that was really beset with a lot of increased fixed costs. And there's a whole, you know, there's like 4 or 5 different categories. But we did, in the sort of minimal amount of time that we met, talk about that at length. That was the one item that that received the most discussion. Usually in years past, it's been healthcare. But the healthcare trajectory has been somewhat managed, you know, fairly well over the last 10 years, FY15, FY25, where we are now. So next is Representative Josephson.
Yes, through the chair. Can one of our testifiers explain the decrease in other?
Through the chair, I believe that represents the decrease in the restorative justice funds and the replacement by UGF.
Follow up.
But I thought you said it was 5.6 million through the chair, that was the replacement, and this shows 12.5.
Through the chair, Representative Justice, there's 5.6 million in one place. It happens in two places, both the physical health care and then in institutions. And combined, that's the 12 million. You see.
Representative Ortiz.
More comment, Mr. Co-Chair. It does seem like this particular agency, there's just not a way that we can really. Is their budget pretty much protected by statutes? In other words, is there even any debate as to whether or not we go down the road of, it sounds like you had some conversations about this, of just continual increases as inflation happens and as things happen? It's just more or less our obligation to year after year increase their budget. Is that the way it is really under statute? Or is it a matter of discussion and debate at all in terms of realistically? You see what I'm saying? In other words, should we even talk about it? Because are we bound by statutes that we just have to fulfill these obligations year to year, these increased costs?
Well, let me sort of lead off. The answer is yes.
Okay.
Obviously.
yeah, that's fine.
But the increases in costs, I'm looking at my notes here. There was even though the department over the years have been offering bonuses of up to $10,000, and like the sister agency, Department of Public Safety, have been doing a yeoman's job in terms of recruiting and trying to fill the vacancy factor, they've still not been able to really get to the place where they can avoid having to pay overtime for more senior level positions, that cost more and that require more money, and hence the increment to population management of 5.4 million. But it's a number of increases, and I'll ask Mr. Allensworth to amplify on this. One including costs of vendor costs with community residential centers, the halfway houses, and Labe, do you want to take it from there?
Yeah. Through the chair. The services that this department provide are constitutionally mandated. How those services are provided are up to the department and up to the appropriation of the legislature. There is a level of care that is demanded, and there are increased costs for programs that have been put in through statute, and so there are increases. How those are managed are dependent on the legislature and the department.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And like other agencies, services, commodities, everything seems to be increasing, and this is an agency that's largely, almost exclusively funded by UGF, and given the mandate to perform its duties, every year we look at these costs and we sort of grimace explore any and all opportunities to reduce them. But if we reduce them, they just come back at us in the next year's supplemental, right?
Thank you.
Other questions, comments? Representative Galvin?
Yes, I did have a question. I don't know how much in depth you got into the costs, but in thinking about transportation costs in particular, which I know is very high in healthcare as well, I know that in COVID, we learned that by doing things virtually, I'm thinking about some of the non-essential to be present for visits, for example, either with lawyers or with court systems or with hospital visits. I'm wondering if there has seen some cost savings in returning back to the same practices as COVID, if there was discussion around that.
Through the chair, during the subcommittee process, there weren't discussions about those kinds of cost savings. I'd be happy to follow up with the department and get back to you on any answers they might have.
Right. The department didn't come forth with that as a major sort of cost increase item, though I'm sure it was. Mr. Painter, do you have anything to add?
Mr. Chairman, not on that item. I would note that the cost increase with transportation they're seeing right now is relating to the Lemon Creek partial closure. With that, they've had to transport more inmates to court dates in Juneau because those inmates are not in Juneau. So that's sort of where that cost item is right now as a variable, but I haven't heard discussion of that in terms of other areas.
Representative Hannon, any comments? You were at the subcommittee meetings.
Mr. Chair, and I was trying to unwind my memory because to Representative Galvin's point, there was discussion, but I think it's in the court system, where they talked about the ability for pretrial screenings to be done, that they're doing a lot more services with distance delivery with computer instead of transporting people from corrections to the court. But that's going to show in the court budget versus corrections budget. And that corrections is continuing as many of those things they can. One other piece was that their budget last year, we thought there was going to be a lot of savings in healthcare. They stood up a whole new dialysis unit at one of the prisons. But even though that was successful, other healthcare costs continued to escalate. So some of the money that were expected out of overall healthcare savings weren't seen, even though the dialysis unit has been successful, trying to bring services into the system.
Further comments or questions, subcommittee or committee members? Representative Stapp?
I'm failing at reading my cues.
No, that's okay. I won't say anything.
All right. With that, that concludes our morning work. We will adjourn to our next meeting this afternoon at 1:30. And at that time, we will continue with subcommittee closeout reports. At 9:32, we are adjourned.